First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a...
So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Ed Springsteen Show, brought to you by the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com, where you can go for all the latest shows, any information, anything else we've got going on. While you're there at LouisvillePolitics.com, don't forget to do two things. One, click on our sponsors. They help pay for the show. And two, join our RSS feed and our email list, and everything will get directly sent to your inbox. With that in mind, let's get this week started. How are you, Mr. Martin?
All right. You know, listening to the intro, and it's like, get up, and I'm thinking, nope. I've been working in a cool warehouse all day, and I got home and had to plow the road. I honestly couldn't tell if my road had been plowed by the government, so
yeah.
I took it upon myself. So, no, I've been up. I've been up, and I'm finally in a place where it's warm, so I am going to sit my ass down on the couch, and I'm not getting up and going to the window. Sorry. I'm done, man. There's a DiGiorno's pizza in the oven, and it's almost done, and that means I'm done.
I hear you, brother. I tell you. You know, it just never amazes me the way that the weather changes so quick around here. You know, last week we had 60s, and then we had this big storm was moving here, and 2 days ago we were going to get, you know, a half to three quarters of an inch of ice, and you know, 6 to 8 inches of snow, and you know, and now what do we end up with? About 2 inches? That's at best, maybe three. Very, very, very little ice. I mean, just everything just changes so fast around here. One day it's spring, the next day it's winter, and I tell you, it's always funny to me. You know, from what I understand, there were not a lot of major problems today. I mean, the roads were trashed this morning, but they got a little bit better throughout the day. We're going to see a lot of freezing tonight, so for our Louisville audience, you guys just be real careful tonight, because everything that's wet when the sun went down will refreeze. We're getting down to some drastically cold weather. So, but it never ceases to amaze me. And, you know, it's funny because Bullitt County and our surrounding counties, Hardin County and the others, you know, from what I understand, their plows were working and their roads were clear. Why can't we seem to get that right here in Louisville, in Jefferson County?
I don't know. I tell you, I got a first-hand look at it. I had to, yeah, my wife's a nurse, so I drove her to the hospital this morning for work. It wasn't a plowed road from the east end to the, in towards the St. Matthews area. They're a four-wheel-drive truck. That's freezing. I went, but you know, it was discouraging. I've taken the rather than complaining, I've actually gone about saying and posted on social media that, you know, the drive in Louisville was beautiful. I got to drive on the pristine white snow. It was lovely. It was picturesque, all the way from where I live, way out in the east, you know, the southeast end, all
right.
the way into town, and then back out to Bullitt County and Mount Washington. And like I said, it was just beautiful white roads. And I get to Mount Washington, and I swear, as soon as you hit the county line, it just got ugly. There was old, ugly, gray roads exposed everywhere. The plows came out and removed all that beautiful snow. They had just removed it. And I thought, these guys out in Bullitt County, they do not appreciate the aesthetic beauty of snow on an otherwise
right.
ugly, gray roadway.
Only you, man. I actually saw that post. I was laughing this morning when I saw it up there. But there is a lot more going on in Louisville than just this daggone snow. As always, we've got many things to talk about, and we may get in a couple of national things. We'll try to tonight. If not, we'll tackle tomorrow. But one of the first things out there I want to talk about, or at least talk to our audience about, and by the way, folks, 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334 are the numbers to the show. And if you want to join us in our live chat, please do. And for you guys that are in the list queue, as always, thank you very much. Just remember to hit that number one on your dial pad, and we will get you on air. Councilman David James, we talked about him late last week. Mike O'Connell, the county attorney, is basically lying, as usual, saying that, you know, James might have a conflict of interest because he's a UofL police officer, and it just came to his attention. 4 years ago, I know of two people who sent Mike O'Connell letters talking about the KRS statute, wanted a ruling on it, whether James could hold both offices simultaneously, that were ignored. The same thing by Attorney General Jack Conway, who all of a sudden now is involved. As I pointed out, the reason for that was David James is actually backing Mike O'Connell's opponent, so this is nothing more than political garbage, and Mike O'Connell should be disbarred at the very least for playing this silly game. Well, anyway, Mike O'Connell had told David James he wasn't allowed to vote in the Metro Council's meetings at all, and David James said, screw that. He was in his regular seat at Thursday night's Metro Council meeting, and he voted on everything that was before him. I personally want to commend David James for that, you know, for standing up to him.
Absolutely. I mean, David James was elected by his constituents to represent them, and he's basically looking at an attorney. We don't have a judge's opinion on it. You know, this is not going
right.
to court. But he's looking at an attorney who's trying to bully him into not voting, saying, you know, I'm who I am, and it hasn't been settled by the courts. I'm telling you not to vote. And David James is, it's very constitutional. He's looking at it, saying, I would think he's saying, you know what, my constituents elected me to vote. I talk with my constituents. There are some votes that probably directly affect them. I'm voting. You know what? And if there's something wrong with it, you know, what are you going to do? I hope there's that thread in there, too. It's like, okay, so I vote like I'm elected to vote, you know, like I'm a, like my office is, that's what it exists for.
Right.
I hope at some point it comes to a point of like, okay, so what are you going to do about it?
Well, that's exactly where it's at now. David James has staked his claim, and Mike O'Connell has staked his. You know, it's interesting, though, because, you know, David James was also quoted, that there's a possibility of legal action against Mike O'Connell. He wouldn't go into any details of that, but he is basically saying that, you know, he is considering legal action against O'Connell about how he's handling the county attorney's office and representing the Metro Council members at the same time over this. And, you know, this is nothing new. David James has been serving on the council since he got election in 2010. He won on in his own right in 2010 for that seat. He goes to City Hall and Metro Council chambers and everything else. He's been in uniform many, many times. He's spoken standing side by side with Mike O'Connell, who knew he was a UofL officer. And there is absolutely nothing KRS or the council rules that would give anybody the right to deny David James a vote as a council member. So this is pretty interesting and incredible, but I just wanted to bring everybody up to date on that.
If I'm not mistaken, isn't what what O'Connell's saying is that David James, he takes an oath on the council, and he takes an oath, you know, as an officer, and that, you know, like apparently the, now, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't the conflict basically said, you know, you can't be taking two oaths?
Well,
you can't be beholden to two oaths. The jobs are fairly congruent with each other, if you're asking me. I mean, it's law and order. You know, at that point, then I guess if the city council, you know, if David James can't be a police officer for university, then, you know, where does it end? Is council member not allowed to have a son or daughter at a university or employed in such a, I mean, come on, look at the people who have family members employed with felony convictions and stuff. We've covered that before. And this is an issue. I mean, we've said it before. Good. David James is a cop. See? I'm glad he's on the Metro Council. Good.
You know,
I like the guy.
I've got a name for you. Tom Owen. And I tell you why that name is important here, because the KRS will not allow you to have two Metro jobs at the same time. If David James was still a sworn police officer of LMPD, there would definitely be a conflict here. But he's not a sworn officer with the city. He's a sworn officer with the university, which is not a city-owned business. So this is nothing more than posturing by McConnell to try to get even with James for not supporting him. You know, and the reason I mentioned Tom Owen is Tom Owen works at the University of Louisville, the same as David James does. Now, what capacity David James's is, whether that's a U of L police officer, a janitor, a historian like Tom Owen, a professor, doesn't matter. When anything brought before the Metro Council that the university wants money from the city for, Tom Owen recuses himself from that case because that would be an ethical conflict of interest. Although we have proof that Tom Owen hasn't always done that. But, you know, that's an ethical conflict of interest. So it doesn't matter what David James' job is with the university. He's not a sworn officer of LMPD, which is a Metro entity. So there is no conflict here. You know, now David is going through and he's trying to do some other things, and he'll probably get a reappointment or a reassignment somewhere and not be an officer anymore, which is, you know, what he's always been. But it's pretty pathetic. Mike O'Connell wants to go to that thing when we've got real problems going on out there. And here we're going to take a detour, man. We're talking about cops. Let's talk about cops. A detective with the LMPD by the name of Carl Payne is in some serious trouble. LMPD is investigating Carl Payne because Carl Payne apparently had been sending sexually explicit text messages to a woman that he arrested. That's right, folks. Cop arrests a woman, then he starts sending her sex messages. What makes this even more interesting, for me anyway, because there's a backstory involved here, is his supervisor, Lieutenant Kit Stimley. He has been in charge of the department's violent incident prevention, enforcement, and response unit, has been placed on administrative duties, and he has his own investigation going on. And the investigation concerns whether he covered up for Carl Payne or not. Here's the situation. As everybody knows, I'm no fan of today's LMPD. Based on a few of these rookie cops who are just idiots, in my opinion, who could care one crap about the law. All they want to do is sit in their car and then arrest people for fun to fill some kind of a quota. And they ruin lives doing so. However, there are a lot of officers who are not like that, that I consider friends, including retirees. And this Lieutenant Kit Stimley, to think that this guy is heading up anything that has to do with a violent incident prevention is incredible to me. From what I've been told from sources, this guy has a history of abusing women, stalking, anything else on his own. Now, I will not swear that that's true. I will tell you, in my opinion, what I have been told, I can believe, you know. But this guy has his own situation. So covering up for Carl Payne, knowing that, would not really be that hard of a stretch for me. But, you know, why is it that we continue seeing these kind of stories coming out of LMPD yet? This is amazing.
Well, I mean, granted, as a percentage, they make news. I mean, it's sort of like a lot of other cases. I mean, it hasn't been proven yet, hasn't been proven in court, but it, like I say, if it bleeds, it leads. So it was, it's kind of one of those ones that makes you chuckle when you watch it on the news, you know, shake your head, face palm, whatever. But, I just think as with social media and a lot of stuff, you see in your personal experience, I think it's somewhat alarming the number of police behaving badly incidents that seem to be, you know, it could be the fact that we just see it more, but, you know, it seems like they're out there. And it, to me, it's, you know, the police are like a lot of organizations, it's a brotherhood. And I, the thing that gets me is a guy like this Carl Payne, he does this, you know, it doesn't just reflect poorly on him or his supervisor. It reflects poorly on everybody, you know. So anybody that sees a picture of a cop shooting a dog on the internet or something, you know, if part of you start to think, you know, you got to hope it doesn't happen here. And then something kind of weird does, you know. And you just look at it and you go, ooh, man, that's kind of like, you know, those weird stories in Penthouse that you read when you were 14 years old. It's like, really? He's really doing that? You know, with all the news out there about teachers and students and just other kids, sex and other kids and you know, the horrible mug shots of guys up getting caught with you know, sexting and kiddie porn, and it's all that out there, and you go and do this. And I feel, you know, if he gets caught, good. If he gets convicted, good. He's kind of a weirdo. He's probably, you know, going to escalate at some point. But, you know, catch him and hopefully that's the last of it, because I really, really don't want to, I don't relish the thought of my wife or daughter getting pulled over by a cop and then, you know, getting messages later on and just going, oh, God, that which is seen cannot be unseen. Please stop. You with me there, Ed? Hey, hello.
Sorry, man. I accidentally hit a dumb button on my phone or on my microphone. Anyway, the interesting thing here is, yeah, believe it or not, this is one of those things you hit, you know, when you got a call for something, so don't go all over the air. And apparently I left it on. I apologize for that to our listeners. But the interesting thing here is, though, the public...
I hope you got a couple good coughs in while you were doing it.
Actually, it was inadvertent, man. But interestingly enough, though, the Public Integrity Unit, according to the Courier-Journal, this is where this story comes from, the Public Integrity Unit has already obtained sexually explicit text messages, pictures, and videos that Detective Payne had sent to this alleged victim, who he had arrested on drug-related charges in April. Payne was actually placed on administrative duty February the 7th. Lieutenant Stimley was reassigned 2 weeks after that. There's an administrative investigation into his conduct. And I guess it's administrative because he's a lieutenant and not an officer. But here's something interesting I want people to really realize about this Lieutenant Stimley, because the name looked familiar to me when I saw this, and I couldn't remember why, so I did a quick research. You know, in 2001, I don't know if you remember this or not, but in 2001, it's been a lot of years ago, a lot of people won't, but there was an 18-year-old kid shot in a van. Apparently, Stimley and his partner had come up on this van. This van backed up and backed into a police officer, his partner. So Stimley opened fire and killed the guy behind the wheel while he was backed up against the wall because his cop was behind him. Fascinatingly enough, Jefferson County Grand Jury did not indict Stimley at that time on the shooting. Then they tried to state with the Commonwealth's attorney, Dave Stingle, at that time, said that the prosecutors didn't really make any recommendations, so they were split on whether an indictment was warranted. He should have been put away for murder. he didn't just take one or two shots at this kid. He took multiple shots at this kid and just refused to stop. There's all kinds of crazy stories about this. But so he got away with killing this kid. Then, according to the Courier-Journal, they did an open records request on this, on Stanley's personnel file, and found 12 use of force reports on him for overusing force and stuff. They also said that Stanley received a written reprimand for failing to terminate a vehicle pursuit when he was ordered to by his commanding officer, and his file also had 5 sworn citizen complaints. So this guy is nothing but a daggone college frat kid on a power trip who has a history of this dating all the way back to the mid to late 90s. He doesn't care one bit about anything. To him, it's all fun and games, and he doesn't care because he's never held accountable. Why is it that these type of officers are still on the force that can be that can allow this kind of thing to happen? Isn't there a better way for us to get accountability here?
You would think so. I mean, you know, like I said, if nothing else, you end up and maybe they don't get convicted criminally, but these things cost the city a fortune. Because there's always going to be civil trials and stuff, and these things cost a fortune. So, on top of that, if you're involved in the city administration, if you're involved in police administration, you just have to look at it from an insurance and a liability point of view. Like this is what always kills me about it is, you get like the private sector. If you have a problem employee and you keep them on, if somebody gets hurt, you know, because they go ballistic or they shoot somebody or some sort of violence, you know, and you know of it and you haven't taken proper measures, then your company's liable. You're liable. And it just amazes me that you know, everything from essentially sexual harassment to almost stalking by this, you know, just this really weird stuff this cop's got going on right now. It's like not only you're looking at criminal, but this person you're basically opening the department up, and right. It is proven that administration. Then it's like come on, guys, let's grow up, let's get into the go into the big boy zone, and you start treating things you got to treat things evenly. You don't get a free pass just because you got a badge. You can get sued. You can drive your cost up. You know.
Well, there's a whole lot of things. Well, there are a whole lot of things you should be able to do. The unfortunate thing is that so many times when you do take and do something to these cops to hold them accountable in court, you know, a cop shows up in uniform, and most people are predestined to believe that the cop is always right, that there's a reason that somebody got in trouble. You know, everybody wanted to believe that there was a reason I got arrested, and then they found out different, you know. But it's predestined, so when you go to court and you try to get a jury or anything else, even if you win, you know, juries typically don't reward a lot of money in those type of cases because it's taxpayer money. So they automatically want to believe the officer, and then in the freak accident they go against the officer, they don't award a lot of money because in most cases it's not coming out of the officer's pocket, it's coming out of taxpayer pockets, so they don't want to hurt themselves or hurt others in that situation. But we continue having this kind of stuff going on. I mean, there are so many LMPD officers out there who are stalking people, harassing people, I mean, all kinds of crazy stuff. These are the stories I get to hear every day, you know, and now we've got another example of it. And that's not it. We've got another case going on right now, too. I don't know if you've seen that yet, but apparently there was a punch caught on camera from an LMPD officer against a guy by the name
Phoenix
of Richard
Hill.
Graham. Huh?
Yeah, the Phoenix Hill Tavern, I believe, yeah.
Yeah, LMPD officer punched Richard Graham. There's a video of it. LMPD officer came toward Richard Graham. Graham yelled something to him. The officer just walked up to him and punched him right in the head. Now, I don't care what he yelled to the officer. It doesn't matter. He could have said, his mama wears combat boots. I don't know what he would have said to him. But that doesn't give any officer the right to physically abuse you. He walks up and slams a guy in the head and everything else. Well, now, Grandma's went and filed a complaint with Louisville Metro Police Department. And this is going to be nothing but a whitewash, folks. He's going to get maybe a little written warning or something. Police said they are going to investigate. But, I mean, let's face facts here. I've seen how those investigations go. And it's always 98% of the time, they want to side with the officer, and they're going to make sure the officer doesn't get anything major out of it. But here this guy is, his hands are down on his side, and he gets nailed, hit in the head by this LMPD cop. And there you go. Graham suffered a concussion.
And in the sense of the situation, you can tell he's yelling at the cop. So, you know.
Oh, sure.
That's a bad move.
He doesn't have the right. He doesn't have
the one to escalate.
Well, I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, the officer does not have the right to escalate that into a physical altercation. He never hit the guy. Graham walked, walked up to Graham and hit him in the side of the head. Graham suffered a concussion. They still don't know whether the cop was there as security or whether he was called there, you know, after all this happened. But it doesn't matter. If that cop is in uniform, even if he's off duty, he is on duty. If he is in uniform working security, he is on duty. That's his oath. He is a cop 24 hours a day. So, you know, but the cop never arrested Graham. He hit him in the head, gave him a concussion, never arrested him. They don't know each other. As of right now, there's not a lawsuit filed, but I'm sure that's going to change. So here you've got, once again, another incident where LMPD and taxpayers are on the hook. The problem is this is becoming a daily habit, and I'm trying to understand why. This is very disturbing to me. I started really paying attention in July of 2012 when I was illegally arrested, and I cannot for the life of me turn my head to this any longer. So we're going to start paying more attention to the police abuse that's going on here in Louisville with the LMPD, and we may even go ahead and add a spot to the website. We want to hear your stories. So if you've got stories about police abuse and you're willing to go on record and you know the things that some of these guys are doing, give us a call at Louisville News, 742-8519, area code 502, or write to me at myviewmatters@AOL.com, because it's time we do something here, Ed. We've got to stand up and make changes. In the meantime, we're going to take a quick break. We get back from break. We've got other things going on. We get to talk about one of our good friends, Hal Heiner, who is set to make a major announcement tomorrow, and a whole host of other things. Stick around, folks. You ain't heard nothing yet. Listen to the Ed Springsteen Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. We'll be right back.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@AOL.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Ed Springsteen Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Don't forget to call the numbers, 858-683-1326, or 502-805-0334. And you guys in the listening queue, hit that little number one on your dial pad, and we are set to go. Mr. Martin, I tell you, major announcement coming tomorrow. For everybody in Louisville, they're familiar with Louisville real estate developer, Hal Heiner, who was the former Metro Council member, former Metro Council member at District 19. Forgive me, man. Wow. Apparently, Hal is going to announce tomorrow that he is going to run for the Republican nomination for Kentucky governor in 2015. We also know that he is planning on running with Casey Crosby as his running mate for the lieutenant governor spot. Thoughts?
Well, yeah, I've never really heard anything bad about Casey Crosby, so I think it's probably a good choice going for the women vote and the Lexington vote. But as much as I like Hal, if to be perfectly honest, I think if there was a race, a Republican race that you could have steered clear from, I would have said this would have been it. It's Cromer you go to Lincoln Day Dinner, Jamie Cromer is speaking there. He visits all 120 counties. I don't think it's any mystery what he's building alliances. He's speaking at other people's fundraisers. He's going to all the counties. He is laying, we say, well, Hal's starting a campaign early. I think it's no mystery. Cromer has been campaigning for a year or more. And I just think it's a tough one. It's a tough race to have picked. And there's so many other races that Hal could have gotten into. And I think he could have done well. But I just think, you've got a nice guy. Hal is a super guy. I mean, you take him at his word. He's smart. He's got everything going. But, boy, just a tough race to pick. And, as a Republican, I almost hate to see that because I think Cromer is absolutely cream of the crop, and I think Hal Heiner is absolute cream of the crop. And you just, at some point, you want to look at everybody and say, come on, guys, you're two of the best the party has to offer. It is.
Well, I think
run for the same office, really.
Well, I'm in total agreement with you there. But I tell you, I would have loved to have seen Hal Heiner run in the mayor's race right here in Louisville and take on Greg Fisher. Hal barely lost to Greg Fisher in the last election, and now everybody knows just how pathetic Greg Fisher is. I think Heiner would have won that race in a runaway. But he has his heart set on governor, and quite honestly, I'm with you. I think that Hal and Jamie Cromer are both cream-of-the-crop guys. Casey Crosby is certainly no Hillary Clinton. There is no baggage there. I think Casey Crosby is probably a real good choice as a running mate for anybody that wants to run on a Republican ticket for that. But I'm just puzzled about this as well. I hate to see two great people, regardless of party, get in the same race against each other when there were other options available. As far as, you talk about campaigning for the last year, when you're a politician, you're campaigning 365 days a year, whether you're in an election or not. Because once you win this election, you're working for the next one. Jamie Cromer, of course, he campaigns every day as the agriculture secretary and all that stuff. So that's nothing new, certainly not to hold against him. But Jamie Cromer is doing a fantastic job, by the way. And Hal Heiner did a fantastic job when he was here in the Metro Council. So it's going to be interesting watching this race move forward. What's really interesting to me is why Hal chose now to announce. And for the people in our audience that are listening, our governor's race isn't until 2015. So, you've got more than a year and a half until that race. So, it's interesting because this year you've got the midterm elections. Everybody's worried about hoping that the Republicans are hoping they can take back the Kentucky House, which they haven't had in almost a century. You've got the national level. There's a lot of people hoping that Republicans can take back the U.S. House, or gain a lot of seats to get more power there because of just how bad things are. So it's interesting to me that he came out this early, Jamie Cromer has went on record stating that, He's really not set to make any announcements right now, as well as Kathy Bailey. She was considering the race as well. You know, all of these things add up. They don't want to announce anything right now because they don't want any attention taken from the 2014 elections. So, you know, but I don't know. I'm trying to understand the timing of this. What do you think?
Well, I think part of it is he's been out of politics for a number of years after, you know, after a good race. And I think he knows he has a name recognition issue. And, tell you what, I give him props for it. I mean, he's sitting back, and he probably knows statewide he has a name recognition issue. So he's getting in the race early. But I look at that and just think to myself, oh, dear God, you've run a race before, Ed. I've run a race. Could you imagine campaigning for a year and a half?
I'm with you. Yeah. It's a grind, man. It really is. It's a total grind. So, you know, it becomes all consuming. I mean, you know, Hal, for anybody that knows Hal or anybody from Louisville knows Hal well. But, you know, what is the extent of the appeal? Because most people across the state have this chip on their shoulder when it comes to Louisville running for state office. They just don't like us. They just don't like us. So I guess I understand going out a little bit early with the announcement to try to get your name out there, get some name recognition. And I honestly believe that Hal will bring a heck of a lot of votes, and I think it'll be a dynamite race between him and Jamie Comer. I just hate to see it because I think they're both good people that can do so much more. And I'll tell you why, because we've got another story coming out, came out last week in USA Today. And we're going to talk about the most miserable states. Where do you think Kentucky ranks among the list of the most miserable states?
Well, I mean, I guess it, like anything, it depends on who you ask. But you know, as far as economy and education and, you know, I tell you what, I got to throw weather in there because we have some pretty miserable summers with the, you know, that overall health, we're always, we got to be, I guess if you say in the top five, we got to be in the top five of the most miserable states. We've just, you know.
You're actually very true.
We've got a lot of issues.
You're actually very true. USA Today says that the well-being of Americans has not improved in the past 6 years and actually declined in 2013. So under Barack Obama, we've actually gotten a lot worse the way that we feel. When you look at this and everything else, then you have to start looking at who's best and who's worst. One of the most interesting things was North Dakota. They topped the well-being list at the end of 2013, and I know why. I'm one of those few people in this town, you know, that will admit or at least know what the allure is to North Dakota. Folks, it's lifestyle. I lived in North Dakota for 4 years in Grand Forks, North Dakota, in the military. And I tell you, you talk about if you can handle any rural kind of life at all, you know, and a slower pace of life, it's great. A lot of flat land, a lot of cattle. Cows, bulls, horses, you name it. And there's just miles and miles of just nature and beauty. So I can see that because it's a less stressful way of living. So they topped the most well-being list in 2013. Hawaii fell to eighth. And West Virginia is actually number one of the most miserable states. But here they are in order. Number 10. Sound like Dave Letterman, don't I? Number 10, Louisiana. Number 9, Oklahoma. Number 8, Missouri. Now remember, we're talking about the top 10 most miserable states. Number 7.
Honest, that surprises me. I would. Why would I don't know why Missouri would be there. Just, but
no. Oh, I can see why Missouri is there. You ever spend time in Kansas City or St. Louis?
I like St. Louis.
I can't stand St. Louis. Try going there at night and see if you come out alive. There's a lot of St. Louis.
Yeah, you got a problem. But
there's a lot of St. Louis that's like that. Number 7, Tennessee. Number 6, Arkansas. Now, I've got a family in Arkansas. And I can see that.
I can see that. I've been to Arkansas. Yeah.
Number five, Ohio. Number four, Alabama.
Well, I would say Ohio owes a lot of that ranking to maybe Cleveland.
Yep. That's what I say. I agree with you. Cleveland. Yep. There's no doubt about it. Number four, Alabama. Number three, Mississippi. Notice I haven't mentioned Kentucky yet. Kentucky comes in at number two as the most miserable state in America. Their well-being index score on all the factors that they measure was a 63.0. We're tied for the sixth lowest life expectancy. We have the ninth highest percentage of obese population. We are the fifth lowest median household income. And we're also the fifth lowest state with high school diplomas. I thought those were really interesting stats. And, of course, as I mentioned, number one is West Virginia. So what does this tell us, though, when we look at this? We continue talking about education funding, right? We're spending all this money in education. We're pouring billions of dollars into education. And we're still the fifth lowest in the nation with the percent of high school people with a high school diploma. You talk about the household income. Why is our household median income the fifth lowest in the nation? Because we're the second highest taxed in the nation. You can't get jobs here that's going to give you a chance to create an income. Obesity? Well, when you don't have jobs, you don't have money, you tend to have to be poorly. So we've got high obesity. And life expectancy, look at all the things I just mentioned. Of course, we're the sixth lowest in life expectancy. And that's the kind of stuff we're talking about in Kentucky. So then you look at all of this stuff. You look at everything that's going on. We've got all these cops that are crazy. We've got low life expectancy. We can't get jobs making any kind of money. People don't want to graduate from high school. What do they got to look forward to? Nothing. You know, it's not hard to see why our misery index is that big, is it?
No, you know, and the only one I always take issue with is the income. I get it that we have low income, but we also, on the upside, we have a pretty low cost of living. So, you know, you can buy the same house here for, you know, $100,000. It's going to cost you $300,000 in a lot of other cities. So, you know, in Kentucky, I can see. You know, I've always taken issue with that because that's sort of a relative and a subjective number. But, yeah, all the other factors, and, I mean, they can't – on top of that, if you look at it in the more sophisticated areas like Louisville, you look at our government and things like that, and it's like, really, we're just kind of running it like a bad 1970s movie about, you know, bootleggers in the South and the good old boy politics. I mean – I think a lot of people in Kentucky, one that they didn't count in that thing, is just this whole, do you have any faith in your leadership? Do you have any faith that it's going to get better?
And so what's the one common, so what's the one thing that's been consistent here in Kentucky for the last century that may have led to these problems?
Oh, I think ultimately it becomes education, but the Democrats have, I know you want to go there. The Democrats have run the state most of the time, yeah.
Actually, it's not where I want to go. It's just the truth. Our good friend Paul Holliger over at Stop It just pointed it out in the chat room. But it's the truth. The Democrats have been in charge of Kentucky politics, you know, for nearly a full century. They've got all the decisions. And this is what we continue to run into. And they continue blaming Republicans and everybody else, and they keep getting reelected based on their failures and their lies passing the buck. I find it very, very interesting. And yet we're still too scared to make changes. But, you know, we are having all kinds of struggles here and across the nation as well. Because, as I said, you know, there were people that just fell completely out since 2013. Those are done. And, you know, we've got to really start paying attention and start looking at the flaws and get involved in our elections. And we'll talk about more of that going forward, of course. I do want to get into – let's see if we got time here. Yeah, we got time to get into a couple of things real quick. I do want to get into a real quick story. Apparently, Lois Lerner, and this is according to BizPak Review, Lois Lerner, everybody remembers Lois Lerner, the former head of the IRS, that ended up taking over another job, making the same money, and still screwed up. But Lois Lerner was in charge of the IRS scandal. And last year, if you remember, when she was brought before Congress, she claimed the fifth that she wasn't going to speak to Congress. Everybody knows that as the former director of the IRS's Department for Tax-Exempt Organizations, that she was responsible for targeting Republican organizations, Tea Party, and everything else that were seeking nonprofit status. And there's a whole host of other things that were done. Tried to lie and say that it was a small group in Cincinnati that did that. And then, of course, she admitted that the IRS had improperly put these Republican groups under the microscope, and then invoked the Fifth Amendment and refused to testify. Well, apparently, Daryl Issa, and I got to be honest with you, folks, I love this guy. You may not like him a lot in politics or anything else, but he will grind the hell out of anybody that comes before his investigating committees. It's just incredible what he does. But she has now apparently decided that she is going to go ahead and testify Wednesday. What do you think we're going to hear, Ed?
It depends as to whether she gets immunity or not, but I think you're going to get a lot more than a fifth. Granted, people like him. Some people don't. But I think in the end, his politically motivated, and she's certainly not going to do anything that's going to get her sent to jail. So I would expect, another round of the fifth, the fifth. And then maybe at some point somebody's going to say, all right, what's it going to take, immunity? So maybe she's just she's jockeying for immunity, and I don't know.
That's the interesting
anymore,
thing.
I just don't know what's going to come of it because, like I say, they know what they're doing. She knows she's already played the fifth a whole bunch of times. Hey, she does it again, so what? I think she gets to that point. I do. So I just,
well, ultimately, I wonder because I'm curious myself.
I'll be surprised if I will be stunned if a bombshell comes out of it. I will.
I don't think that she's going to claim the fifth. Because I honestly, and they won't tell us either way at this point. I guess we'll know more Wednesday. They won't say anything either way at this point, whether she's been granted immunity or not. But from what I gather, just reading reports out there, she's coming forward because they've uncovered so much more in the last year since she resigned her position now that they've got all this new evidence that she's wheeling and dealing now. So I'm wondering if she's going to come and come clean because of immunity. I don't think she's going to claim the fifth anymore because really at this point, that would be the worst thing she can do with whatever they've got. So I'm kind of curious to see how that's going to work out, but I thought it was very interesting, and we're going to pay attention to that. We'll bring more to you about that. I'll actually be watching part of that Wednesday myself, and we'll bring the news on that then. International, baby. We got to talk about this Ukraine deal. The Huffington Post actually did a poll. And see, this is the thing about polling, folks, we keep telling you, because I don't get how they add up their numbers. But according to the Huffington Post poll, very few Americans want the U.S. getting involved in the Ukraine situation with Russia. Even though they agree that by Russia putting their military into the Ukraine, that's an invasion. Now, we get involved in every invasion around the world, right? It is interesting, before I go any further, Sarah Palin, believe it or not, back in 2008, said this was going to happen, and it has. When Mitt Romney talked about these things in 2012 when he was running for president, he said that Russia was a threat and don't underestimate them. And Barack Obama was able to use this plan thing, yeah, sure, he's living in the past because the Cold War has been over for 20 years, try to act like it was no big deal. So there have been warnings by Republican candidates, and now look where we're at. But what's interesting about this poll is that according to this poll that the Huff Post says, the new survey shows that 46% of people said the U.S. has no responsibility to protect Ukraine in the case of a Russian invasion. And 36% said they weren't sure. So when you look at these numbers, they're saying that everybody says that we don't need to be there. But that's not exactly what I'm reading here. 46% say didn't think we needed to be there, which basically leaves 54% you really need to talk to, right? So that's what I'm talking about, the way that you do these polls. What do you think about this Russia-Ukraine situation?
Well, I think, it's terrible what's happening. That, you know, always bad when people can't get along and they have to send militaries in to straighten it out. You know, and it comes down to gunfire and whatnot. But it's part of it is, you know, look at it, it's Europe, okay? And it's former Soviet bloc, you know. And borders are drawn, you know, there are borders that are drawn sometimes arbitrarily. Happened in, you know, actually the Crimea and the Ukraine was 1954. So I think you've got an indigenous people there that probably want to identify more with Russia. But then again, you know, you got to let them settle it. The thing is it's just like we joke sometimes, like about the Bosnia, you know, we talk about the Bosnian War and stuff. Some of these conflicts, some of these ethnic and religious conflicts have been going on for hundreds of years. And it shouldn't surprise anybody. I don't think any great clairvoyance or deductive skills on behalf of anybody that may have said, hey, this might blow up.
You know, well, it's fascinating.
Half the best situations on any given day and says, hey, this could be a problem. It's like, yeah, it will be. Don't worry about it. But I think ultimately it comes down to, and Dale Gillespie will love this, that I think it's kind of ironic. It's starting to sound like Ron Paul won the election. It's the non-interventionist stuff. Not isolationist, but non-interventionist. It's like, look, we cannot, you know, and the world has hundreds of countries in it, and we're currently the most powerful, but that doesn't mean we get to go around and tell everybody what to do. There are some pretty big other kids on the block, and yeah, you know, and we're tired. And I think it's if they would have polled me, I would have been one of the ones that said, no, we have no business there. We on so many levels, we can't afford it. Our military can't afford it. Our military personnel cannot afford it. It's this is not Afghanistan we're talking about either
right
here. This is Russia, okay? It's some 5,000, 10,000 miles away from home. It's
uh-huh
right across the border for the Russians.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, we're just going to be reaching out and trying to affect a situation from a very long distance where, for them, it's a regional thing. So, you know, it would be no different than the Russians telling us, you can't build a wall, you know, you can't force a border with Mexico. We'd look at them and say, what the hell you mean we can't force, you know, hey, look, you know, check out a map. We're right here, okay? You know, this is our business. You mind your business. And I think that's essentially where we're at, is although we're right to protest and we're right to show some concern for it and maybe engage in some, you know, economic sanctions if they piss us off, which, you know, you're entitled to do that. But as far as any military intervention, oh no, it would be sending people up against, you know, into a situation that could explode with a much more potent adversary, going to cost lives and money. And
right,
I don't think it's our business. I don't think in the long term, just like we're about to find out in Iran or Iraq and Afghanistan, that once you pull up, you get these ongoing long conflicts, whatever their origins are. Once you pull up and leave that area, it goes right back to what it was before you were there.
Well, it's really fascinating to me. I mean, for one thing, the timing is great. And I wonder if the timing is not intentional, and I'll tell you why. Because who just held the Winter Olympics? Russia. The closing ceremonies were just, what, Friday? And then within 48 hours of the closing ceremonies, with the whole world still watching Russia, Vladimir Putin takes this power move into Ukraine. So I think that is very, very interesting. You know, Vladimir Putin, for those who don't know, I mean, this guy is the real deal. He is not Barack Obama. This guy has no respect for Barack Obama because Barack Obama has no balls. That's the truth, folks. This guy is the premier, ultimate alpha male. Okay? He doesn't play those games. He doesn't play those games. So, you know, this move was designed and intentional. It's a big chess move to see what Obama's going to do. And all Obama has done is start threatening sanctions and economics and all this crap. You know, and the reality is that's a bunch of horse garbage. Russia has been working with the Chinese for oil for a long time. They don't care what's going on here. Russia hasn't got to worry about economic sanctions from the United States. They're going to get plenty. Plus, Russia is one of the veto members of the United Nations.
Yeah,
so if everybody in the UN said invade Russia because of Ukraine, Russia says no, and there's nothing they can do according to what we were our agreement. So this is all a big joke for me. I think this is all about pushing Obama to see what he's got. And, you know, it's easy to do right now because Vladimir Putin knows that Obama is nothing but a wimp. You know, that's why we go into places like Afghanistan and all that. And let's look at the reality here, too, folks. There's something else nobody wants to pay attention to, and that's the fact that, you know, World War II, when you go back and look at history and everything else, after World War II until recent years, we had about 200,000 American troops primarily stationed in and around Germany to protect against Russian aggression and things like that. Today, that number is closer to about 10,000. So it's not like we have troops or anybody else there that can stop any aggression. There's nobody close to do that. It's not like we're going to go ahead and start this war with Russia when we're no in position to do it. And quite frankly, I agree with you. We don't need to go into the Ukraine, no more than we need to be in Iraq, Afghanistan, or any of these other places. Let these damn people sort it out themselves. Why are we wasting our time in Iraq and Afghanistan? They're small potatoes. Let these people sort it out themselves. Get our troops back here. Let's take care of what we're supposed to take care of. Go ahead.
Absolutely. I'm all about sorting it out themselves. But we also have to look at it again. And I think sometimes intervention is maybe not perfect, but it's except, you know, it you can weigh your return on your investment. And sometimes it makes sense. Sometimes intervening to, you know, like if a major oil exporter, I hate to say that, gets invaded, but you can knock it, you know, you can kick the invaders out pretty quick, then it's not a bad move. But I think, you know, the nation building, the protracted wars we get into are poorly, you know, everything about them is poorly contrived. And the other thing is, of course, I've had a few guys work for me that have immigrated that no Russians, no direct Russians, but some that were involved, you know, old Soviet Union. And they look at us in Afghanistan and they look at us in Iraq and they just say, what the hell are you doing there? You know, these guys, and I've never been able to quite pin it down if they themselves were there or not, but you got to remember, the Russian Empire collapsed when they overextended and started the war with Afghanistan, and eventually, you know, kind of the same thing we got going. So I think Putin has paid attention to history, and he's also got to be looking at it right now going, you know, if there's any time to go in there and do this, it's now, because the American people, they're weary. They realize that, you know, whatever their net cost for these wars is $3 trillion. Their economy is shaky. Their debt is high. And he's like, he says, you got to be, some Russians have to be looking at themselves thinking, you know, when we went into Afghanistan and Iraq, they had to be looking at it going, did they not learn anything from when we got our ass kicked in Afghanistan? And they thought we had been looking at it for, you know, a decade going, oh, it's only a matter of time. They said that country is going to be so battle weary and bankrupt. We'll be able to do whatever we want. Not looking to start a world war or anything. I don't think they're up to that. But they'll be able to say, we're going to be able to do a little consolidating and go in and clean up some messes we've been wanting to clean for a while, because the U.S. isn't going to be in a place where they can do anything about it.
So we're the new Russia, man. We're war-weary, and we're bankrupt. We got to wrap up, man. We are right at the end of the hour. I appreciate you guys staying with us. Mr. Martin, final thoughts.
Oh, final thoughts. You know, going back to the Hal Hunter thing, because we both think so much of Hal. We both think so much of Jamie Comer. If anything, if they listen, it'd be like, guys, keep it clean, because they're both – you know, they could probably come up with some stuff, you know, some good ideas and a good healthy exchange and a good dialogue. But they're both top shelf guys, and I'm just really hoping that they don't go negative on each other in an effort to win the governorship. It's, you know, I think it's Comer's race to lose, even though it hasn't really started yet. But I'm just, you know, for two guys that I really like, as we said earlier in the show, I hate to see two guys that I really like going after each other for a race that's a year and a half away.
Well, okay. I mean, I can actually save it for a minute. You know, truthfully, I think what we will see first time in a long time is we'll actually see a clean election with that. Because Hal and Amy aren't typically two guys that go to the negative and try to take you in the dirt and see what sticks on people. These guys are both above board. They both talk about the issues. They both explain positions very, very well. So we'll actually have a good choice in the Republican primary, you know, next year for that race. For governor. But, you know, I wish it could be a different way, but I'm with you. It's not. And, you know, there's really not much more to say about that. Tomorrow night, folks, Mr. Martin will be back here at 7 o'clock, as usual. And we will get to some more things, including a very interesting story I ran across today. But apparently in Orlando, we've actually got some restaurants that are going to start charging a surcharge to help pay for Obamacare. Yep, you heard me right. We'll talk about that more tomorrow night at 7.
All right.
And I guess there he is. Okay. That's what I'm waiting for. Folks, tune in tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, same time, same channel, for more of the Inspiration Show on the MVM Radio Network. And anytime, enjoy the remainder of your evening. We'll talk to you. Thanks for listening.
All right. Yeah.